Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher. With me, Josh Landsberg and Gordon Glantz. This was supposed to be the Eagles playoff game after they won the NFC East and got the first round bye, but instead, we're talking about the new Eagles coach, who turns out to be Doug Peterson. We talked about the candidates last week, and we went through them, we evaluated them, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But I guess no one knows whether he's going to be a good coach or not. But let's look at the process and how they got Doug Peterson. So, Gordon, we'll start with you. What did you think of the process? What went right? What went wrong? And does it even matter?
In the end, it doesn't really matter. I think, you know, there's this school of thought they should have kept looking for guys and interviewed more people. You know, I think that they, you know, give them a little bit of credit. You know, I don't think they didn't have a plan. I mean, it's ludicrous to think, you know, a professional sports franchise, which is like a major corporation, you know, goes into things without plans. I mean, that's just not the way it's done. I think what they had was maybe a plan A, B, C, D, all the way down, maybe, you know, to, you know, H, I, or J, running concurrently. You know, it wasn't that they had a priority. You know, the one coach, you know, is 1, 2, 3. Well, I don't think it was a list. I think it was more a bunch of plans running parallel. And then they would kind of see how things, you know, worked out. You know, it's almost like, you know, there's an animal, a prairie dog. They kind of tunnel a hole for themselves, and then they kind of come out the other side. I think they kind of, you know, tunneled a bunch of holes for themselves, and they wanted to see, you know, who was still around, who was still interested. You know, it wasn't just who they're interested in, who really wants to be the coach of the Philadelphia Eagles as well. You know, or are they second or third on somebody else's list? You know, I think there's a lot of gauging of that going on. You know, who really wants to be here? And, you know, if you, you know, I don't know if we want to get too much into Peterson yet, but, you know, if you go back and kind of replay Jeffrey Lurie's press conference after he let Chip Kelly go, Peterson does fit a lot of the criteria he talked about. He's, you know, a lot of people are frustrated with the experience, and I guess we'll have to see how that plays out. There's no way to know without a crystal ball, but you know, he does fit a lot of the criteria. He's been in Philadelphia. He knows the market. He knows the fan base, and you know, he's been around pro athletes a lot more between you know, a pretty long career as a player in the league and then as a coach the last 7 years. So he does fit a lot of the criteria that he talked about. So, you know, I don't think he was – I don't think to characterize it as he was the fourth or fifth choice. I think he was one of the choices, and you know, he felt better to them as they went along in the process.
Well, Gordon, this runs counter to everything you just said, but I didn't think of it until you said it, plan A, plan B, plan C, plan D. Josh, is it possible that plan A for Adam Gase, B for Ben McAdoo, C for Coughlin, Tom, and D is Doug? Is it possible that the Eagles in this process weren't aggressive enough in getting the guys they really wanted and ended up with choice D, Doug Peterson? Is that possible?
Well, it's interesting the way you phrase that, A, B, C, and D, all the guys, Adam Gates, Ben McAdoo, and Tom Coughlin, and Doug Peterson. It's interesting the way that works out. I really liked your article, Eric, on PhillyFanatics.com. Everyone listening should check it out, called Last Man Standing. And, you know, Doug Peterson was the last man standing. You know, they liked Adam Gates. They wanted to bring him in for a second interview. The Miami Dolphins snatched him up before they could do that. They wanted Ben McAdoo. Then the Giants promoted him within to their head coach. They wanted Tom Coughlin, and then Tom Coughlin pulled out as a candidate for the Eagles. He didn't want to coach the Eagles, so he pulled out, and they ended up with Doug Peterson. But I think that Gordon hit on a lot of the things that maybe, you know, he wasn't – you could look at it from a cynicist point of view or negative standpoint, that he was the last choice, that they had all these other guys they wanted to bring in and they weren't able to get their guy. But at the same time, you could look at it that it could end up working out for the best, that Jeffrey Lurie kind of harking back to Andy Reid days kind of has a soft spot in his heart. Andy Reid's message – you know, he's done a great job with the Chiefs. It just got old after a while. He'd been with the Eagles for so many years, and it's very rare a coach like Bill Belichick can still have success for that many years. Andy Reid here for, you know, about 15 years, and eventually goes 4-12 his last season. You know, it leaves a sore spot in the fans of Philadelphia sports fans. But he did a great job while he was here. Very good coach. He went to 5 NFC Championship games, 1 Super Bowl, didn't win the ultimate prize, but You look at Doug Peterson, you look at Andy Reid's coaching tree also, Ron Rivera and Sean McDermott, and a lot of guys around the league have had head coaching and assistant coaching positions, and Andy Reid has built a pretty good coaching tree around the league, so Doug Peterson fits under that coaching tree. He's a quarterback coach here in Philadelphia. He's the offensive coordinator with the Chiefs, and he's done a really good job in Kansas City, and he did a good job here with the Eagles, and you look at a lot of the factors that he fits in with what the with Jeffrey Lurie and the Eagles are looking for. He's not going to look for control, so Howie Roseman will get that control, whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing. That's a topic for another time, but I think that Doug Peterson isn't going to rock the boat. He's going to just be the head coach, not the GM. He's going to come in. He's a Philadelphia guy. He was a quarterback here before Donovan McNabb took over. Obviously not a great quarterback, but a lot of times the best players don't make the best coaches. The secondary guys make the best coaches. The you know, the backup quarterbacks, the player, an offensive lineman who, you know, maybe wasn't a superstar in the league. A lot of these guys make the best coaches, and Doug Peterson fits that bill. So he's a Philadelphia guy. He was here in Philadelphia with the team for a few years, and he did a good job in Kansas City. And you know, you could look at it, as I said, a negative standpoint. They didn't get their guy in Adam Gase, who they wanted at first, and then they had Ben McAdoo and Tom Coughlin. But overall, it could end up working out the best for them, and he could be the best coach for the Eagles.
Right. I mean, you know, last time they did get the hot guy, which was Chip Kelly, a guy that other teams wanted, and the Eagles were able to convince Kelly to come here.
Yeah, that didn't work out.
Right, exactly. Gordon, you referred back to Jeff Lurie's news conference when he released Kelly or fired him or whatever word we want to use. And Josh just did, too. One thing he did talk about, and maybe this falls into who the candidates were and why they didn't cast a wider net. You know, Jeff Lurie said it didn't matter if it was a college coach, a high school coach. I don't know if he said high school coach, but, you know, a college coach, a pro coach, a coordinator, an offense, a defense. But everybody they interviewed, with Coughlin being the exception, who was a head coach, but everybody else was an offensive coach at the pro level. They didn't even bring in anybody from college. And they didn't bring anybody from the defensive side. Does that tell you that Lurie was looking for an offensive coach?
Well, I guess sometimes when if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, you have to call it a duck. So
no more ducks,
I guess,
please.
So. You know, he may tell you otherwise, and he's good at giving you explanations counter to what looks like obvious, and maybe there was a lot more that went into it. It just happened to be those were the guys. You know, I really think McAdoo, just kind of back up a little bit, I think McAdoo really wanted the job in New York, and that's where he's been, and he was pegged as the successor, and, he was probably just using the Eagles for leverage, so I don't know how serious those talks really were. I mean, the Eagles were doing due diligence by interviewing him because I think he was a good candidate. And Coughlin, I think Coughlin was looking to come in here if McAdoo wasn't going to be the guy there, because maybe he could bring McAdoo with him here and kind of resurrect his staff here, you know, from New York. So, and when that didn't happen, he kind of pulled out as well. So, you know, like I said, the interest had to be mutual. I mean, you're not going to get on your knees and beg guys, you know, you have to kind of get a vibe and really, you know, I don't know if it, I don't think it was a descending order as it was a few candidates kind of running concurrently. I think Pat Shurmur was probably in that mix as well. So, I don't know that much about Deuce Staley, although I do kind of hear that they want to try to keep Deuce Staley on the staff, but I guess it's ultimately going to be Peterson's call, and I don't know. But, I think those are things you have to factor in as well, just to back up a little bit. But, you know, offense or defense, that is kind of, you know, I guess it's with the exception of Ray Rhodes, they've always, well, I guess Andy Reid was offensive and Chip Kelly was. He hasn't really hired too many coaches here. So that is the way he looked. I mean, Adam Gase, you know, young, I mean, he doesn't really fit my age requirement. I always say you got to be, I really wanted the candidate to be over 40, which Peterson is, and under 70, with Coughlin was pushing 70, you know, and Gase is 36. And, I maybe that sounds a little rigid, but, there's a reason why, you know, we have a voting age at a certain age and we have driving at a certain age and you're going to be the president of the United States at a certain age. Maybe certain people are more mature earlier, but, you know, by and large, you know, the pro athlete today can you know, walk all over a younger guy. So I wasn't that excited about Gaze either. I know he was kind of the hot name as well, but I don't think the Eagles wanted to get into a situation where they were going to have to give him control as a condition of hiring him. So, you know, maybe I don't think it was as much last man standing. If they weren't happy with Peterson or encouraged by the interview they had with Peterson, I think they would have kept looking. There were other people to look at. So, you know, right now I'm thinking, you know, I'm interested in who they're going to hire as coordinators. I think that's really a key to how this is going to work out. You know, Andy Reid came in here as just a quarterback's coach, but he was surrounded by excellent coaches, and that really helped him in just his second year make the playoffs. So I guess we'll just have to kind of wait and see how it plays out. But, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be a great coach, but I'm not like some of these other people, and I said it in a column that you have posted. I'm not going to, you know, vilify a guy who never coached a game yet either. So, you know, but to answer your original question, obviously he, you know, I don't know if it just turned out it was offensive coaches or, you know, that's just the people they were interested in from doing their homework. It just happened to be offensive coaches.
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting, you talked about the process, and it was interesting the Giants sort of had their hand forced a little bit when they were looking at Hugh Jackson. If you believe the reports from the New York papers, they were interested in Hugh Jackson, and then when he signed with the Browns, they sort of figured we better grab McAdoo now before he signs with the Eagles. He was sort of, you know, it was McAdoo or you know, that sort of set the dominoes in action. Where McAdoo signs with the Giants, like you said, Coughlin can't bring his coaches with him. He doesn't come here. Josh, I wanted to lead up to something Gordon brought up, and I wanted to take it to you. You know, one report with Coughlin also, and this came up with other people, is that the Eagles had certain coaches they wanted to keep. Deuce Staley being one, Corey Unlin being another. You know, other names bandied about, maybe as many as four. Do you think that was an impediment to bringing in a head coach? That they were saying, you know, hey, you come in here, but we want you to keep these four guys.
Yeah, I think it definitely was. I think any time a head coach comes into a new situation, he wants to bring in his own guys. And I think that was certainly an impediment with Tom Coughlin. He wanted Ben McAdoo to come over. Once Ben McAdoo signed on as the Giants head coach, he obviously couldn't bring him over. I think that a head coach wants to bring in his own guys, and the Eagles were saying they want certain guys to stick around. And I think that could have been an impediment from certain coaches coming here, but obviously it wasn't an impediment for Doug Peterson. He comes over, and I think that they got to move on at defensive coordinator. They got to get a defensive coordinator in here that can really do a better job. This defense hasn't played up to its abilities. They haven't had great personnel, but they do have some guys like Fletcher Cox and Michael Kendricks and certain guys that are really Pro Bowl caliber players and guys that can make a difference. Malcolm Jenkins is another one. Their secondary isn't great, obviously, but I just think that the defensive coordinator for the Eagles is just not getting the job done, and they need to move on. They need to bring in someone that can turn around this defense, and hopefully Doug Peterson can find that right guy. Gordon talked about how Andy Reid had great coaches under him, Jim Johnson being one that obviously really the Eagles had a great defense during Andy Reid's tenure, and Jim Johnson was the main reason why. He was a great defensive coordinator. The late great Jim Johnson passed away, unfortunately, obviously, but he was a great defensive coordinator for the Eagles for many years, and you saw the defense slip after he passed away, and it was hard for Sean McDermott to take over. He had to fill those big shoes. Obviously, he's done a nice job now in a second stint in Carolina, but he wasn't able to take over in Philadelphia, and I think that they need to bring in someone else that can really do a better job, and hopefully Doug Peterson will find the right guy that can be a good defensive coordinator for this team.
Yeah, looking back, and Gordon's made this point, really a tremendous staff of assistant coaches with not only Jim Johnson, but you had John Harbaugh, Rivera, really just a great group of coaches. Ron Ofer's now with us, and so, Ron, I'll give you the final word here on the Eagles hiring process. Like I said, it's tough to predict what Doug Peterson's going to do, whether he's been coaching or not, but I will give you the final word here on the coaching search process and the hiring of Doug Peterson.
Well, all in all, he's a relatively highly thought of candidate and presumably now named, although I guess it's with a wink and a nod. Doesn't seem to be official yet, but it's unofficially official. The interesting thing to me is more, I think the owner is driving a certain process here where he is enamored of coaches that come from the offensive side of the ball. And rightly or wrongly, I guess this league is the offense first, even though you have to play well on both sides of the ball to succeed. You really do have to go all the way back to Buddy Ryan to find a head coach of the Eagles that came from the defensive side of the ball. And I was thinking this time around was maybe a chance for Sean McDermott to get a second chance here, or for the Eagles to look the defensive side of the ball. And to me, I can only think that it's the owner, because I don't know that Doug Peterson necessarily was the best candidate overall. He's a decent candidate. He might have been the best candidate who is an up-and-coming coordinator from the offensive side of the ball, I'll give him that. It just seems like the process was somewhat myopic from my point of view. And the point made about the assistants coming back dovetails into that. I don't know that anyone's getting anywhere close to free reign coming in after the Chip Kelly debacle. So, you know, it's not like I'm surprised. I guess I'd have to say I'm a tiny bit disappointed that there wasn't a broader net cast. I come back to the culture change thing that I brought up, I think it was a couple of weeks ago. Here we are, another ex-Eagle, so to speak, coming back. And why do the Flyers get flack for that, but the Eagles don't?
Yeah, well, actually, Ron, or Mike Silski wrote that this week, actually, how the Eagles, how everyone else has moved forward in process and culture, and the Eagles seem stuck in, you know, going back to what they've done before. So I think you have a really good point there with, you know, they got Howie's back in charge. Not, you know, there's different opinions on Howie. He probably takes a bad rap for a lot of things, but, you know, you're going back to what you had before. I think Jeff Lurie sees that as a good thing, but I'm not sure everybody else does. And I may or may not have said this last week, but if you don't like the Doug Peterson hire, just wait 9 games, and they're going to replace him with Donovan McNabb, just like they did at quarterback, so you'll be all right. So if I repeated myself, I'm sorry. I can't remember everything I say. I can't remember yesterday, let alone what I said last week. So let's shift to the NFL playoff, because we've had another great weekend of games still going on, actually, and we got Pittsburgh and Denver going on right now as we're doing this show. Right now it's 13-9 Pittsburgh in the third quarter. But yesterday there was a game for the ages between the Cardinals and the Packers that the Cardinals won in overtime. Just a tremendous game. We also saw Doug Peterson and Andy Reid's Chiefs go out to the Patriots 27-20. Gordon, pick one game or the other and give us your reaction to it, either the Patriots making the AFC title game for the fifth straight year by beating the Chiefs, who had won 11 in a row, or the absolutely thrilling overtime game between the Cardinals and Packers.
Well, I'll take the Patriots Chiefs game, since we're on the topic of, you know, Andy Reid and him being a mentor of sorts for Doug Peterson. Let's hope he learned all the positive things from Andy Reid and not clock management, because obviously it was deja vu all over again, the way the Chiefs really took their time and huddled up in a league where people can intermittently, not like Chip Kelly did it, but people can intermittently, you know, put their foot on the gas pedal when they need to, but for some reason Andy Reid teams can't seem to do it, and they cost themselves a chance to at least win a game. Bill, and you know, Bill Belichick had to think he was in time warp as well. So, so that's an impression I came away with from that game. And one thing I just want to throw in real quick, and I know Ron wasn't on with us yet, but just Ray Rhodes was hired by Jeffrey Lurie, and he was a defensive coach. So, just wanted to throw that in.
Yeah, Super Bowl. Yeah, it was. I thought I was watching Super Bowl 39. I don't have the exact time, but that last Chiefs drive took more than 5 minutes, and I'm pretty sure that Eagles' last drive, Super Bowl 39, when they appeared to have no urgency, also was 5-plus minutes. It was like a time warp. Josh, so you automatically go to the Cardinals. That's not true. You can pick either game, because we have Ron here as well now. So impression from one of the games, either the Patriots-Chiefs game or the Packers-Cardinals overtime game.
I got to go with the Cardinals and the Packers. That was an all-timer, just an unbelievable game. Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels couldn't believe it. They were speechless at the game. It was unbelievable back and forth. It was 20-13 And Aaron Rodgers, similar in the regular season in a game that he won against the Detroit Lions, it was a little bit longer of a pass. I believe it was like a 60-yard bomb. He threw a Hail Mary, and Richard Rodgers caught it in the end zone for a touchdown and beat the Lions and probably saved their season and got them a playoff spot. And now down 20-13 in the playoffs, he throws a 40-yard bomb in the end zone, and it's caught by Jeff Janis, a guy who only caught two catches all season long. So just so many storylines in this game. And Janis, I believe, had like 7 or 8 catches in the game for close to 100 yards or over 100 yards. And he had the touchdown there. And just an unbelievable game. That tied it up at 20-20. And then in overtime, you have the coin toss where the coin didn't flip. I found that one of the most humorous things I've ever seen. The coin didn't flip. And the refs had to flip it again. The Packers, I believe, it landed on heads, and they had called tails. So they asked for a reflip, and on the reflip, it landed on heads again. So, and the coin actually did flip that time. The Cardinals, of course, took the ball, and then Larry Fitzgerald had an unbelievable game. He only had one catch for, I think, 7 yards in the first half, but just an unbelievable second half with multiple catches and over 100 yards. And he had that play where he was wide open. Carson Palmer, who didn't have a great game, made a great play where he's not the scrambling type, but he scrambled away, ran into his own man, the offensive lineman, for a second, and then scrambled away and threw a ball, showed his arm strength all the way across the field, which you're told I was told playing basketball growing up, never throw a cross-court pass like that. In football, you shouldn't really throw a cross-the-field pass like that because it could end up as an interception or a steal in basketball. And he went against that rule, but Larry Fitzgerald somehow was wide open. I don't know how you leave one of the greatest receivers in the game to ever play the game wide open like that. Somehow he got away, and he threw it to him, and he ends up marching down the field for a 75-yard gain. And then they have one play where they don't gain any yardage, and then they have the shovel pass for the 5-yard touchdown to Larry Fitzgerald for the game winner. Of course, you don't get a chance to possess the ball if the team scores a touchdown on the first drive, which the Cardinals did, and they win it 26-20. Just an unbelievable game. I have the Cardinals, a rematch. My pick before the playoffs started was I didn't get a chance to stay on the show, so I'll tell you now, I had the Cardinals beating the Steelers in a rematch of the Super Bowl just a few years ago. I believe it was 2009 when the Cardinals beat the Eagles in the championship game in the playoffs, and the Eagles had that crazy way they made it into the playoffs. So they had to have all these teams lose, and they had to win, and they crushed Dallas 44-6. And the Eagles got into the playoffs and made it all the way to the championship game. And that was when Donovan McNabb said in the post-game press conference, our receivers showed their youth today when DeSean Jackson was in his rookie year. And they end up, you know, losing that game. The Cardinals go on to lose a crazy Super Bowl, one of the best Super Bowls, to the Steelers, where the Steelers scored a touchdown at the end of the game to win that game, just getting the feed in with the wide receiver. And just an unbelievable Super Bowl, and I think we should see another good one. But I have the Cardinals beating the Steelers in a rematch of that. Right now, the Steelers up 13-12 over the Broncos in a close game with a minute 25 to go in the third quarter. And the Steelers have a lot of injuries, but they're playing through it. They're showing their depth at wide receiver, and really just an impressive run so far for the Steelers. If they can win this game, they get healthy next week. They get D'Angelo Williams back, and they get Antonio Brown from the concussion back next week. And Roethlisberger is 1 week healthier. So it would be a great matchup between them and the Patriots. They beat the Patriots before in the AFC Championship game to win to go to the Super Bowl. So we could see that happen again with the Patriots not being quite as strong a team as I think they have. You know, they were last year.
Well, the Cardinals do have to get past the Panthers first, which is who were up 31-0 today and held on for 31-24 over the Seahawks. Josh, there is an exception to that passing rule, by the way, is never throw back across your body to the other side of the field, unless the receiver's wide open and unless it's Larry Fitzgerald, who turned what could have been, you know, a 20-yard gain into a 75-yarder. Ron, how about you? Impressions from any of the three games that are completed so far this weekend?
Well, I'll definitely touch on the early game today, which is the tale of two games, really. But quickly on the Kansas City game first, I could have sworn, I'll go tongue-in-cheek, that Greg Lewis appeared on the field to catch a touchdown after that inexplicably long drive. It was deja vu, but did you expect anything else when Bill Belichick was lined up against Andy Reid other than Bill Belichick prevailing in a big game? On the Cardinals, Packers, certainly a game for the ages. It threw me back to the first year I was following football was 1971 as a kid, and I remember the Dolphins-Chiefs double overtime game in the divisional round where Miami ultimately prevailed. And that game, I think yesterday, took me back to that Dolphins-Chiefs game. I've really not seen a playoff game quite like it. You know, we certainly saw some of that in the championship game last year with Green Bay and Seattle, but Green Bay, I guess, gets involved in these kinds of crazy games. Now, on to the Panthers. Josh, I'm going to disagree with you. I think the Super Bowl rematch we're going to see is Panthers-Patriots, and I think the Panthers this time are going to exact revenge on the Patriots from what was done to them probably. I should have looked it up. It's over a decade ago now. Carolina looks really strong. I'm not overly concerned that they gave up 24 second-half points. They got very conservative on offense, tried to run the ball, didn't string together enough first downs. But they certainly look incredibly, just overmatching a team that had been playing extremely well in Seattle in the first half when it really mattered, and they were really head-to-head in terms of, obviously, both teams were trying to use their full game plans at that juncture of the game, and it looked like men to boys out there for the first half. It's interesting to me why Sean McDermott didn't get a better shot with the Eagles as head coach, doing a really good job with that defense. But then, I have to laugh, Kurt Coleman is back there for safety on that defense. That's how good a defense is, that they can still have Kurt Coleman out there. Well, you've got Luke Kuechly and Thomas Davis and Starla Tulahi. Maybe you can basically play 10 guys, and that's a strong team on both sides of the ball. So I know for me, I'm looking forward. The Cardinals are a good team in the regular season, but Carson Palmer just finally won his first playoff game after upwards of a decade in the league. And then there's always Tom Brady lurking, and the Patriots are the champs until they're dethroned. So there are a lot of interesting storylines coming. But again, today, the Panthers took the Seahawks out. The Seahawks were kings of the NFC the last couple of years and were really on the rise late this year and went on quite a ride. So let's not diminish what the Panthers were able to do to basically take the crown away, at least as the NFC goes. And it's the road to the Super Bowl in the NFC, Arizona, goes through Charlotte. So we'll see what happens next week.
Yeah, and I do. I'll throw out one quick impression, and because I forgot he was even on the Chiefs team, but I should have known because Andy Reid's there. Jason Avant made some incredible catches for first downs, on third down, and even on fourth down, just like he did here with the Eagles. And that guy just never gets old. He does the same thing, and he's been doing the same thing for years, and terrific catches. I was going to shift to the Flyers, but actually, while we're here, we can't do the AFC matchup. But Ron, you've sort of given us. I'll start with you. Panthers, Cardinals. What do you think is going to happen?
I think the Panthers are going to blow the doors off the Cardinals. To be quite honest with you, I don't think Arizona is going to find their rhythm at all. They've got a suspect offensive line. That, you know, Green Bay, frankly, I don't think they're all that good a team. That Arizona had trouble with them at home, I thought was surprising. I really thought Arizona was going to win that game rather easily. I'm thinking something in the 35-10 type range for that game with the Panthers prevailing.
Well, Josh, how about you?
Well, I mean, I could see the Panthers winning. They did go 15-1, but I got to stick with my pick. I got to go with the Cardinals. I think it's going to be a much closer game. I'll say Cardinals 31, Panthers 27.
Gordon, I'll go to you. I should point out, I think I have this right. You didn't have the Panthers doing very well in the regular season. So how do you think it's going to be Panthers-Cardinals in a championship game?
The Panthers are playing really well right now, and they're going to be at home. They both have excellent defenses, so I don't see it being a real high-scoring game. I see it being more in the 24-17 range. I'll go with the Panthers. What really concerns me, I think the Cardinals are a really solid team without a lot of weak spots, but one weak spot they do have that concerns me. Well, it doesn't concern me that much because they aren't my problem, but Tyrann Mathieu, the Pro Bowl safety, being out for the season, I think they really miss him back there. And as the competition gets better each week, a guy missing from your lineup of that caliber is going to become more and more glaring.
Yeah, they lost a linebacker this week, too, and replaced him by signing Jason Babin. So, although, Babin's not necessarily replacing him, he's replacing the backup. But So there are the Cardinals have lost some people in the past couple of weeks, which hurt the thing. All right, we're going to go into archive in about 25 seconds, but first, a couple things have been mentioned today, so please check out PhillyFanatics.com. As Josh mentioned, the last man standing, which goes through the coaching process. Gordon's column on Doug Peterson being hired. I have a sort of tongue-in-cheek look at the coaching process. Lots of great stuff. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. For those listening live, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Now we move into archive. Ron, let's start with you here. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Ron, let's start with you. The Flyers, they lost a shootout yesterday to the Rangers. Prior to that, they had won four straight games, six straight at home. What's going right for the Flyers?
Well, I played a great game the prior Saturday against the Islanders, one of the best regular season games I've seen this team play in a very long time. Probably have to go back to Peter Laviolette's second season here for a game like that. It turned into a 4-0 final, but it was even more dominant than that. Really, the Flyers totally suffocated the Islanders, and the guys like John Tavares and Kyle Okposo from the top line of the Islanders were coming off the ice, slamming their sticks after nearly every shift from the second period on, and taking some dumb penalties late, slashing at the Flyers. And I had not seen the Flyers get under a team's skin in so long the way they did against the Islanders. So I'd say more globally, to answer your question, Eric, they're just playing a lot tighter up defensively, up in guys' grills, up in guys' faces, and not really giving other teams much breathing room. That didn't quite come into play with the Rangers, who they just simply don't match up well against. The Rangers seem to be able to spread the ice better, utilize their speed, don't get much resistance in the neutral zone. And although the Flyers nearly pulled it out yesterday, they scored late to send it into overtime. And as we know, they tend to lose in shootout when it goes that far. They still were not the better team on the ice yesterday. And I think it underscores that while this team has been on the rise of late in the standings, and quite honestly, if you look at the standings, there's 13 teams battling for those eight spots. There's really only three teams dropped off the pace in the Eastern Conference, so it's going to be quite an interesting battle, and you know, into March for sure, and into April for some teams, but I'm pretty sure the Flyers will be relevant well into March. But when you talk about them playing against certain teams, they just simply still don't stack up.
Fair enough. Gordon, your thoughts on the Flyers, what's made the difference for them as they've, you know, not just winning games, but looking good while doing it?
Yeah, well, I know he's been out, but I say obviously Shane Gostisbehere has been a shot in the arm for this team. I want to give a lot of credit to the coach, Dave Hakstol. I mean, they're just playing better hockey. It probably took a while to get for his system to click, but you know, both ends of the ice, you know, Ron addressed them defensively, but you know, there seems to be a purpose more when they're on the forecheck, when they're on cycle, and you know, it actually, you know, creates opportunities. It, you know, instead of having all three guys caught behind the net like we used to see a lot of times, and them not coming away with the puck, and they seem to be playing for each other instead of kind of getting in each other's way. It's kind of hard to put into words, but the system seems to be working better, and I think that's, you know, what we see. And he's also been a little more daring with trying to put lines together to create some secondary scoring. And he has, you know, two legit lines that are scoring goals. And obviously when you get that, you know, you're going to be in a lot of games. So, you know, I think all the, you factor all those things in together, and the goaltending has generally been pretty solid as well, because you don't win without that. So you throw all that into the mix, and it's a pretty good thing.
Okay. Josh, how about you? What's been the difference for the Flyers, or what do they need to do to continue to sustain, I'll say, to sustain what they're doing?
I think the guys hit on a lot of the points that I was going to mention, but I'll just add that Sean Couturier has played really well. You know, he's been a guy that's been a disappointment in the past and hasn't played up to his abilities. He was a big-time draft pick, and he's played well on both sides of the puck, both offensively and defensively. And I think Sean Couturier's improved play of late has been a big reason why this team has had success and why they're on this streak that they've been on.
Oh, Josh, thank you.
I completely agree. You're absolutely 100% correct. And they've gotten him some new line mates that do better with him offensively.
Yeah, well, that's I was saying, and give me a chance to plug the Flyers notebook. It's been up for a couple of days. It's been up for maybe almost a week now. Couturier definitely playing better. And, you know, for a while, people said, oh, he's with Voracek and Simmons, but then they put him with Shannon Raffel. And, Ron, just like you said, he's elevated their games. Those guys are both playing better with him in between them. So I think, you know, all three of them deserve credit. But I think what it gives the Flyers now is two-line scoring, and which makes it obviously a little tougher for the opposition to defend. All right, let's go to final thoughts. Josh, why don't you lead us off this week in final thoughts?
Well, I'll go with the Sixers. They get their fifth win, and they're playing better basketball. They get a blowout, actually. And, you know, I talked about the Sixers. Will they have less losses than the Warriors have or less wins, rather, sorry, than the Warriors have losses? Will they have less wins than the Eagles had wins? The Eagles, of course, going 7-9. And it looks like they're going to, you know, we're kind of got a lot of time left in the season. It looks like they're going to be better than the Eagles with their seven wins. The question is, can they break their own record of they had nine wins in 9-73 season back in the 1972-73 season. So will they break that record or will they not? That's up in the air. But they're playing better basketball of late, and it's somewhat of a good sign to see that. Obviously, they're still going to end up with the number one worst record and a 25% chance to get the number one overall pick and a guarantee that they get the top three pick. But as a fan, you like to see them get some wins every now and then.
Well, you're right. It looks like they're going to catch the Eagles 7. We'll see about the 9. And what really remains to be seen, Gordon, is whether they'll catch Sean Couturier for our little side bet. With Couturier has
right.
9 goals right now. The Sixers have 5 wins, which leads us to Gordon, your final thought.
Okay, my final thought, present company and present show excluded, I'm increasingly astounded about the new lows we are hitting in this region with sports talk radio. It is something we have all incorporated into being a sports fan for almost 3 decades now. Josh probably grew up with it ever since he can remember, being younger than we are. And, you know, with the decline of print journalism and the rise of alleged insiders tweeting lies and half-truths while citing anonymous sources, sports talk had an important void to fill. And just when we wanted it to, you know, kind of carry us on its shoulders, it decided to shrug. There's always been hosts that have played different roles. Some have entertained more than others. Some have been more annoying. Some have been more informative. Some have, are more plugged in with what's going on. They're more like, you know, they have the inside dirt. We hardly have any of the above anymore. The bar has been lowered to such an extent that we have 2 channels in the middle of the FM dial, which is where the prime channels are, that are dedicated to sports talk, and we have barely 1 listenable host between the 2 channels. The result is a less informed fan base, which is why a new coach is coming to town to coach the football team, and he's facing a lynch mob that's ready to act as soon as he throws a red flag in error in his first season. So that's my little rant.
Yeah, I will say we don't have to go through all the hosts one by one. But a prime time for me for listening to sports talk is on my way home from my day job. I quite frankly, and it's been this way since the beginning of 2015, the afternoon drive is unlistenable for me on either of our sports stations. Absolutely unlistenable.
I
listen to something else because I can't listen to it. Ron, your final thought?
I'll take a quick segue, tongue-in-cheek, in the sports talk radio world. I was at dinner last night with a group of friends, and suddenly a familiar voice ends up in my ear. Paul Jolovitz from WIP, as our check came out, offering to buy us all dinner if we could name every single player on the Eagles' final 53-man roster for the season, at which point I politely declined, even though I probably figured I could get in the 40s, and the only reason I bring it up is, had Gordon Glantz been out with me at dinner, I'm pretty sure we'd have all gotten a freebie, so that's one night Gordon and I were together and enjoying each other's company, because I'm pretty sure you've nailed it and made a jolly pay up. The true final thought is, I can't quite get out of my head that Jeff Lurie basically went to Andy Reid to go get his next head coach. I don't know that many people are talking about that, but I just find that kind of strange. You know, I guess Andy Reid had won as welcome. I wasn't upset he was gone. In fact, I think a lot of us felt he stayed at least 1 year too long here. But it's interesting if you do, you know, his coaching tree, Reed's coaching tree, as mentioned earlier on the show, including head coaches like Ron Rivera and John Harbaugh. And it's just interesting. I just can't get past that we're going back to the future here in Philadelphia, and that the old long-term head coach had a say in this hire, the way I perceive it.
Yeah, Ron, I think you're right. I think it was almost like, and we talked about this, I don't remember if it might have been the week you were on the show, but Gordon talked about, it sounded like Lurie was almost nostalgic, was I think the word we used for the Andy Reid era. And, you know, all the things he said he wanted came back. So I think you're right on target there. I want to say about the NFL. My final thought is going to be, you know, the NFL has so many problems, and we had the you watch the behavior by the players on the field. It's astounding. Adam Pac-Man Jones reaching new lows last week, claiming that Antonio Brown from the Steelers was faking the concussion and winked at him while he was laying on the ground. And did say he would apologize if Brown didn't play this week. And to Pac-Man's minor credit, he did sort of apologize for saying he was faking the injury. You have the movie Concussion. You have all the problems with that. And the NFL comes back and just keeps rolling. And it's why? Because you watch the games this weekend, you watch the games last weekend, and it's just a wonderful sport for television. It's a great sport in person, but it just works on TV so well. The time in between plays is just right for the analysis. It's just enough so people who are insiders can watch it and casual fans can follow it. And you get this unbelievable drama that we had last week with the Seahawks and Vikings, with the Steelers and Bengals. We had it again with the Cardinals and Packers. I mean, to produce games of that quality and drama in 2 weeks, that's why the NFL's king. That's it for this week's show. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com. We have my column up on the Eagles coaching search, Gordon on Doug Peterson, and maybe why he's not getting a fair shake. Last Man Standing, Flyers column coming, Sixers grades coming. I'll talk to you guys about that next week. I was hoping to get some help, especially from Josh on the Sixers grades, to help me a little positivity to counter some of my negativity, but we didn't get time. So thanks for listening to this week's show.
For
Gordon Glantz, Josh Landsberg, Ron Ofer, I am Eric Fisher. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.